Good morning. I'm Donna Quinn, and for the next half hour, you'll be listening to Talk of Our Towns. Today, we'll be speaking with Mary Ann Monson. Mary Ann is an author. She's written many books. Her latest book, Women of the Blue and Gray, True Civil War Stories of Mothers, Medics, Soldiers, and Spies, was released last month to great reviews. She is also the founder of the Astoria Writers Guild, and we'll be talking about an event they're having. She's also doing an Ales and Ideas program on North and South in Dialogue on Thursday, November 1st. So we're going to be talking about all three of these things with my guest, Mary Ann Monson. Good morning, Mary Ann.
Hi, Donna. So nice to be here.
Well, I'm really glad to have you here. And for those people in the community who may not know you yet, please tell us a bit about yourself.
Sure. So I moved to Astoria last August, and I grew up in Chicago originally, then spent about 20 years in the Portland area, and then kept making my way west and landed here.
And you are a professor of creative writing at the Class of Community College.
Yes, I am. Mm-hmm.
And when did you begin writing?
When I was about five, I think. I've been writing for as long as I can remember. I always wanted to be a writer. I've always had a very strong interest in history, although originally historical fiction was really where I thought I would land, and then crossed over into creative nonfiction at the suggestion of my editor.
So you continue. Were you writing books throughout college? Like, let's talk a little bit about where you went to school and when you actually started publishing books, because
sure.
You've done children's books and let's talk about all those books.
Right. Okay. So my undergraduate degree is in English literature, but I knew I always wanted to be a writer. So after my undergrad, I became an intern actually at a publishing house in Portland, Beyond Words Publishing, and then I worked my way up there to eventually become managing editor of the children's division. And so that was a great introduction to the world of publishing. And they actually published my first book, which was a children's book about fairy cultures and traditions from all around the world. And then I eventually went on to earn a master's in creative writing from Vermont College of Fine Arts. And yeah, then I started teaching after that and writing, and writing increasingly began taking more and more of my time. And I'd say within the last 5-6 years, I've specifically focused on the area of women's history, writing women's history.
Why is women's history so fascinating to you?
So I think that it's an area that has just become more and more relevant and explored in the last few years. I think for me, I've always been very fascinated by the lesser well-known stories within history. I've always had a strong interest in history, but I wanted to understand the way that significant events impacted average people, normal people, and so often women's history is the study of that. It's not the dominant narrative that we've heard about the presidents and the generals of the armies, because traditionally, those haven't been women. And so I think women's history gives us an opportunity to look at the impact of significant historical events on everyday people.
Right. So it's really beyond the battlefield. It's really what's behind the scenes and how is it impacting everyone?
Exactly.
So what are some of the other historical books you've written, and what were they about before we begin to talk about Women of the Blue and Gray?
Sure. So I've really focused on the pioneer era, the frontier era, and wrote some historical fiction novels centered in that time period. And then my book in 2016 was called Frontier Grit, and it's about amazing pioneer women. So again, it's that idea of looking at the lesser well-known stories. I think within the realm of women's history, there's a small handful of women that we probably did encounter in school growing up. But beyond those small number of stories, you know, like the Harriet Tubmans and the Susan B. Anthony. But beyond those few women that we did encounter, there are just so many other remarkable women whose stories have been really lost to time.
Well, how did you find those then? Because it's true, if they're lost stories, mm-hmm. then how did you uncover these stories?
Yeah, they are there. They're just not usually
front
being
and center.
Talked about.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
They're not front and center. So it's just a matter of digging, sometimes by talking to people, to local historians, and to family members whenever I can. But also, you know, looking at publications that are for historians and then trying to figure out which ones are most relevant for a broader audience that average people are interested in.
Okay, so Pioneer Grit came out in 2016.
Frontier Grit.
Frontier Grit about pioneer women.
Yes.
Okay. And then you just released Women of the Blue and Gray. Now, were you working on that? I mean, do you have an idea in your head about all the books you're going to write, or do you finish one and then say, oh, now where is my attention being drawn?
Yeah. So my editor and I are both just, we love to collaborate. So we throw out a million ideas, more ideas than we could ever possibly finish in this lifetime. But when Frontier Grit did well, we were talking about what is the natural, like, where do we go next? And so we thought of many different options. We were talking about the women of World War II, and we were talking about the women of the Great Depression, both books that I would love to get to eventually. But then we eventually landed on the women of the Civil War as our next project because we felt it was so relevant to today's political climate.
And explain that. Why is Women of the Blue and Gray, true Civil War stories of mothers, medics, soldiers, and spies, why is that relevant to today's world?
Because I think that in this current political climate where there's a lot of fear, there's a lot of divisions, and that can feel really scary. And also, I think a lot of us have the feeling that it's new territory, that we've never been there before. And that's what history does for us, is to give us context and kind of put our problems and challenges into perspective and allow us to look at the way that previous generations have handled those same issues. Because it's incorrect to say that our country has never been divided to this level before, because that era of the Civil War has so many parallels to where we are right now. And so that's why I felt like it was really essential to delve into that time period and to look at what it has to say to us today.
And you'll be talking about that at Ales and Ideas on Thursday, November 1st, which is a week from tomorrow at Fort George Showroom. That's part of its North and South in Dialogue, the Women of the Civil War. And as you looked at these stories of the Civil War, and as you're saying, you put it into context, did you feel, was there any option besides us fighting each other, going to war? Because now I think people are worried. They think in our today's world, oh my God, we haven't been there here before. We've right. never been this deeply divided. Mm-hmm. And that this could lead to fisticuffs. This could lead to another civil war. I mean, right. what's your perspective on that?
Well, I think that media tends to, and I guess as a society as a whole, we tend to focus on the sensational, the dramatic, the riveting, right? It grabs our attention, especially, I guess, in a world where attention spans tend to be decreasing, and we're looking for constant sources of entertainment. So I think the problem with that is that a lot of times that allows the polarized voices, the most dissident voices, to be the loudest, right? And to have the most amount of attention and focus placed on them. And so people who are turning to violence as a way to deal with it actually end up with the most amount of focus. And I think it gives us a perspective or an impression that our country is even more divided than it may actually be. While there are factions on both sides that, you know, are willing to turn to violence and that are very extreme, the vast majority of Americans are not in either one of those camps, right? And I think we all lose when the two positions are turned into this very black and white thinking. This the lack of complexity and the ability to choose between a more temperate and varied positions, that's lost to all of us.
Indeed. And what did you find as you did your research on Women of the Blue and Gray that surprised you perhaps about working on that? And I'd like you to talk a little bit about the book itself.
Sure.
And it's available at all of our local bookstores, at Lucy's, at Godfather's, and it's gotten great reviews. So please tell us a bit more about Women of the Blue and Gray.
Thank you. Yeah. So I've always been fascinated with the Civil War. I think it's just a really amazing and unique era in U.S. history. But I think what really surprised me was that you can know a lot about the Civil War and know very little about what the women did in it. You know, I've spent a lot of time since the book's come out talking to people who reenactors, people who are historians, It's not the dominant narrative that we know about that story, right? Which is about battlefields, which is about the commanders. And but the women's story of the Civil War gives us a fuller picture of what the country really went through. And there were women involved at every level of that war, serving on the battlefields as soldiers disguised as men. Hundreds of them were doing that, engaged in espionage, supporting the armies fiscally and in terms of food sources in all sorts of ways. Anna Ella Carroll was a political advisor to Lincoln who helped come up with several strategies that were really essential to winning the war for the North. So I think you just have to dig a little bit, and it's remarkable what is there that we have never heard of.
And do you feel after doing this research, publishing this book, and really talking to people that we are on the precipice of possibly another kind of civil war here? Or do you feel like that, no, we are, even though those loud voices are taking over and polarizing people in different ways than have been done before, do you feel that we can work this out with some dialogue? Because it does feel like things are devolving rather than evolving.
I think the term fight for peace or wage peace is one that has come back to me again and again. And as I sign these books, that's what I usually write in the front, because I think voices for peace need to be put at the forefront of the conversation. They need to at least be put into the conversation, because otherwise the more extreme factions will take over, right? It's not peace is not passive. And so
peace can be a verb then. I love it,
right?
Because do we think of peace as a noun?
Right.
But peace can be, is an active word. So you're using peace as a verb.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think we all need to be intentional about it. And it starts with, I mean, individual level conflict, right? Learning better strategies for handling conflict within our community, within our families, within our personal relationships, within our colleagues.
Yes, yeah. Having compassion and saying, okay, so let's say that I believe in black, you believe in white, and so therefore I hate you because you believe in white and I believe in black, and then, or green or yellow or purple, whatever the belief system is.
Right.
And however, if I heard your story, if you told me your story about why you believe in purple or whatever, and I told you my story about why I believe in green, then somehow there would be a path. We wouldn't necessarily change each other's minds, but we wouldn't be so, I wouldn't want to, like, get rid of you, or you wouldn't want to get rid of me, I guess. I don't know.
Uh-huh. Exactly. Yeah, and recognizing that everyone has their own unique perspective and that perspective is valid, even though it's not our own, right? It that requires a certain level of complex thinking that I think our society is moving away from, unfortunately, and we need to return to it.
You have just said something very brilliant. It is true. Things have suddenly become far too similar. Our language, we've lost beautiful words, beautiful ways of expressing ourselves. And that is well said.
Thank you.
That again. I want our listeners to hear that one more time.
Can I remember exactly how I said it?
It's all right.
I think I said that that we need to keep complex thinking as a method of approaching life, and that we have to fight that polarization, which personally I see represented in like football, the sports mentality. Like, if you're not with us, you're with them. That division, that inclination is in all of us to divide and to draw boundaries. It's human nature, but we need to actively fight against it. That was not what I said the first time.
All right. No, that's what you said, something very important. That's great. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Talk of Our Towns. I'm your host, Donna Quinn. And my guest today is Mary Ann Monson. She has lived in this community for a little over a year, and she's done some amazing things here. She's a professor of creative writing at Clatsop Community College. She's an author of many books. Her latest book, Women of the Blue and Gray, True Civil War Stories of Mothers, Medics, Soldiers, and Spies, came out last month. It is available at Lucy's and Godfather's here locally, also online. Great to support our local bookstores when you can, though, please. And then she is also presenting an Ales and Ideas conversation, North and South in Dialogue, the Women of the Civil War, because this is so relevant to today's political climate. And that's Thursday, November 1st at the Fort George Showroom at 7 p.m. And that's, once again, that's free to the community. She's also the founder of Astoria Writers Guild. And there is on Saturday, November 3rd from 6 to 9 at the River Sea, there is an Astoria Literary Ball and Benefit. And we'll talk more about that in the second half of the program. But anything else you'd like to say about Women of the Blue and Gray, your book?
Sure. I would like to say that I hope people will pick this up, even if they're not someone who's inclined to usually read history, because I'm mostly a storyteller. I'm not a historian. So I feel like my job is to go and to find stories from history that are really great stories and that have relevance to the contemporary world, and have all of the hallmarks of what you want in a good story: drama and intrigue and excitement and romance, and that's all there in those stories.
And storytelling is how we really do understand the world. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's so vital. I mean, we know from our tribal cultures, storytelling is crucial, really,
absolutely,
to our understanding of ourselves, our place in the world,
and
everyone else.
And that's exactly why women's history is so important, because it challenges those stories that we've told, and those stories help us to define our identity as a country, and women need to be a part of that identity.
Do you feel that women are more willing to find peaceful solutions than men who I mean, I don't know, I haven't looked at any studies or research, but is the testosterone and the idea that, you know, I must conquer, you know, that's built into my DNA. Do you think that women, if they were able to be the ones in power, that there would be less fighting and more conflict resolution?
Yes, I do. And if you don't mind, I'm going to just read a paragraph from
the author's note
that addresses what you just said. One thing I do know is that women are an essential piece of the solution, whatever it may be. Nobel Peace Prize winner Lema Gbowee helped end the Second Liberian Civil War by a joint force of women. Thousands of Palestinian and Israeli women have come together to demand peace for the Middle East. The United Nations has affirmed women's essential role in peacebuilding and conflict prevention. I know this world is more ethical, compassionate, and nonviolent when women are involved in political negotiations at every level. So what you just said is proven. It's backed up by research. It's there.
Thank you. That's just great. And now let's move to the Ales and Ideas. So again, Women of the Blue and Gray, it's brand new, out last month, and it's available at Lucy's and Godfather's Books. And also, you will have the book and be signing the book at the Ales and Ideas presentation on Thursday, November 1st at Fort George.
Yes. Yes, I will. I love the Thursday lecture series here in our community.
We are so fortunate. We have in this small town, there's so much to do to stimulate mind, body, and spirit.
Yes.
And so on Thursday at Ales and Ideas, you'll be having a conversation about North and South in Dialogue.
Yes. And actually, I want to mention, too, that this Thursday's is Seth Titchener's Wit and Wisdom, and he's talking about, is tolerance possible? So I think the two lectures, 2 weeks in a row, really dovetail nicely.
Absolutely. So tomorrow night, Fort George, Seth Titchener, who teaches philosophy at the Clatsop Community College, 7 p.m. free on Is Tolerance Possible? Mm-hmm. That is a huge and really important topic.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is tolerance possible? Mm-hmm. Even within ourselves, because we have judging parts of ourselves.
Absolutely.
And so how do we find tolerance, you know, for those things we don't like in ourselves?
Right.
You know, so that's, wow. So and then it goes out from there, right? So, okay, so tomorrow night, Seth, and then next Thursday night, November 1st, at the Fort George showroom. Marianne Monson will be there to talk about North and South in dialogue. And then let's talk about the Astoria Writers Guild, because some folks might not even know. Tell us about the Astoria Writers Guild. You founded that.
Yeah. So when I moved here, I was struck by the number of writers in this area. I think there's something in the Columbia River water that just encourages writers and creative growth here. And I wanted to create a way to bring those writers together to build literacy in our community. And so that's what we're working towards doing. So we have a number of literacy initiatives for 2019, bringing writers into the schools, working with VOCA, hopefully, and the Tongue Point as well.
Well, when you say literacy, tell us what you mean by that, because I don't know if people are aware that writing is not only an creative, expressive, artistic form, but it is a healing tool.
Right. Yes, exactly. That we believe that words can be a tool of healing and hope for at-risk populations, for everyone, actually. But people who are in those at-risk populations oftentimes have much less access to literacy, to creative writing programs, specifically for that opportunity to develop their voice and to have that outlet.
So the Astoria Writers Guild is a 501c3. You're a nonprofit.
Yes.
People can join. You have a website.
Thewritersguild.org. Yes.
And so people can go to that website and they can find out about events. So let's just give people an overview of the actual organization. So you are working on literacy programs.
Yes.
So so this is your first actual kind of fundraiser, Astoria Literary Ball and benefit for that.
Right. Yes. It's our first annual fundraiser.
Okay. And so the Astoria Writers Guild, tell us about the events that you have and how it's been since you started it.
Yeah, so we have two primary areas of focus. The first is to create a community of writers here. So we have a monthly open mic at Winecraft. We have monthly workshops that we sponsor where people can come and practice their craft, can learn new skills to improve as writers. And then the second area is serving at-risk populations in our community through writing as a tool. So yeah, we're developing those partnerships, but that is our primary goal, is basically to create this community of writers and then use that community of writers to function within the broader community to really bring creative writing to groups who have had less access to it.
And when are your open mics?
Typically the third Tuesday of the month from 6 to 8 at Winecraft, but we are on a little bit of a hiatus till January. So we just had our last one last night.
Okay, so. The holidays, that's right. They're approaching. Hard to believe that, actually.
Yes.
So let's talk about what's happening on Saturday, November 3rd at Riversea Art Gallery.
So Riversea Gallery has been gracious enough to host us for that event. And if you haven't been to that gallery, probably everyone has been to that gallery. It's such a beautiful gallery. But so we're going to have art that evening. The gallery is going to be open. We're going to have live music and literary themed food and drink. And people are going to be able to attend dressed as their favorite writer or book character. So and there's going to be all sorts of wordplay and bibliophile games.
Oh, that sounds fantastic.
It's
going to be fun and it's going to be good for our brains too.
Yes, exactly.
And so why are you calling it a ball?
Well, because that's very elegant. I don't know that people are going to be dancing necessarily, but they are going to be milling around drinking wine in pretty costumes. So.
Yes, and so they'll be dancing with words.
Yes, that's true.
I mean, wordplay. That sounds great.
There is music. If people want to dance, they're more than welcome.
So that's from 6 to 9 p.m. on Saturday, November 3rd. And how do people need to get tickets in advance? Can they come to the door? How does that work?
It's free and open to the public.
Oh, just it's come. Free and open to the public. Okay,
yes.
So then people, you're hoping that people will come, have a wonderful time, see some art, learn about the words and the guild, and then maybe make a donation.
Yes, donation. And then we'll also be having an auction, silent auction and live auction. And we'll also be having readings by several great local authors like Robert Michael Pyle.
Oh, I love his work.
Yeah,
yes.
Me too. Yay. So some great local authors will be reading music and then live and silent auctions. And all of the auction items are gifts that are literary related. So antique typewriters and beautiful pens and fun stationery and old books and all sorts of things like that.
Well, Saturday, November 3rd is quite a day in Astoria because there are three very important events happening that day. The first is Coast Community Radio's annual membership meeting, and that's happening at the Presbyterian Church, and I think it starts at 9 a.m. on that Saturday. Then that afternoon at 2 p.m. at the Astoria Armory, there is a celebration of life service for Robert Jacob, which begins at 2 again at the Astoria Armory, and that is open to the community to celebrate his many accomplishments in Astoria. And then that evening from 6 to 9, you can go to Riversea Art Gallery and Wordplay.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And experience readings and an auction and dress as your favorite character. So that's a fabulous day in Astoria on Saturday, November 3rd.
Yeah.
Lots of great things to do. We just have a few minutes left, Marianne. What other things would you like the listening audience to know either about your book, The Ales and Ideas, or the Literary Ball and Benefit?
You know, my daughter is 15, and I think when I consider what I knew about women and the role they played in the formation of this country, and I contrast that with what I want my daughter and today's girls to know about the role women played, there's a dramatic difference. And I just think that the stories of the women who helped found this nation, who endured the Civil War, who were a part of the westward expansion from a multitude of different perspectives. I think those stories, they need to be salvaged. They're really important to today. They have an essential message for all of us, whether we're male or female, but especially for those girls who are being raised today.
Yes, and I think it's been said that, you know, when you educate a young girl, you change the culture, you change society.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's so vital. And we need role models, too, and not people who were necessarily famous. This culture of celebrity is very damaging.
Yes.
Because look at the people that you are now bringing to light, the stories of these women are powerful and important stories, and yet they weren't rich or famous.
Right.
However, they were vital and important, and that's what our young people need to say, I can make a difference in my life.
Exactly.
You know, whether it comes with, you know, fame or celebrity.
Many of them looked at the world and had the creativity to consider how it could be better. And I think that's what we need people to do today, is to consider how can we think outside the box of how we've always done things and make our communities more functional, more compassionate, and more vital.
Yes. So, and that begins with, you know, peace as a verb.
Mm-hmm.
And that means creating peace in yourself, in your family, in your community, and peace and dialogue, using words, conversation, storytelling, communication.
Right.
So
absolutely
important. Marianne, thank you so much for being
here,
for all the amazing things you've done since you're here.
Pleasure.
We're just so lucky that, you know, well, you're a feisty ginger. You have that beautiful red goddess hair. And so so we're glad that you have all this energy to give to this community. Thank you so much for these great things you're doing. So again, Marianne's the author of Women of the Blue and Gray. Just came out last month, available at our local bookstores, about women in the Civil War. And then she will be at Ales and Ideas Thursday, November 1st. 7 p.m. That's free at Fort George. And then be sure to come on Saturday to the Riversea Art Gallery for the Astoria Literary Ball and Benefit, first ever, for words and Robert Michael Pyle reading. Ooh, delicious. Thank you so much. And
thank you,
my
Donna.
Gratitude to Joanne Rideout for being the engineer this morning. And many thanks to local talented banjo instructor Michael Bruin for his original theme music for this program. Until next week, find a moment for yourself. Today, right now, take a deep breath. It is so good for body, mind, and spirit. Resets everything. And then, with gratitude, focus on the things that are going well in your life. There will always be those things that aren't going well in your world and in the world in general. However, find the things that are positive. Find the peace in you, the peace you can create in your community, and then give yourself a loving and compassionate hug or a pat on the back for being uniquely you and for doing the best you can right now, in the now moment, the only moment which exists on the amazing planet we call Earth.
listening to Talk of Our Towns on Coast Community Radio, KMUN Astoria 91.9 FM, KTCB Tillamook 89.5 FM. We're streaming at coastradio.org. You can hear us on your mobile device using the TuneIn app. Headline news is coming up in just about a minute. Let's take a look at the weather. Patchy fog before noon, otherwise mostly cloudy with a high near 60. And tonight, chance of rain after midnight, cloudy with a low in the mid-50s. Rain on Thursday, high near 60, overnight lows in the mid-50s. Some items from our community calendar. Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife is seeking public input regarding the site management plan for Cape Falcon Marine Reserve. There's a meeting this week, a public meeting October 25th in Manzanita. That is Thursday, 5:30 p.m. at the Pine Grove Community House, 225 Lanita Avenue in Manzanita. And the South Pacific County Humane Society Shelter will have an open house and big raffle on Saturday, October 27th between 11 and 4. Snacks and refreshments while you visit amazing dogs and cats. The shelter is located at 330 2nd Street Northeast in Long Beach, Washington. You're listening to Coast Community Radio. Stay tuned for headline news and then Wednesday Folk with Mary Ann.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Investigations are underway in the New York City area and Washington, D.C. into suspicious packages sent to prominent organizations and political figures yesterday and today. Two federal law enforcement officials tell NPR the packages addressed to liberal billionaire philanthropist George Soros, former President Barack Obama, and the 2016 Democratic presidential nominee Hillary Clinton are, quote, similar in nature. But it's still too soon to say if the incidents are connected to each other or the suspicious package that prompted an evacuation at the CNN Broadcast Center in New York today. Moments ago, Police Commissioner James O'Neill disclosed more details about that.
Responding officers identified a device that appeared to be a live explosive device. NYPD bomb squad responded, secured the device, and removed it for investigation. Additionally, there was an envelope containing white powder that was discovered.